Radio 2 from the BBC. At 10 o'clock, this is Fionnuala Haddingham. The former leader of the Ulster Defence Association, Johnny Adair, has been arrested and returned to jail. He'd been released early from prison under the Good Friday Agreement. His detention tonight follows an upsurge in violence between rival loyalist paramilitaries, which has left two men dead. The Northern Ireland Secretary, Peter Mandelson, said it was time to confront the dark side of the society in the province. From Belfast, here's Chris West.
The security forces have moved decisively to neutralise what they perceive as the source of the paramilitary feud that has plunged Northern Ireland once again into conflict. Johnny Adair, the former commander of the UDA, is tonight back behind bars in McGabbery Top Security Jail. It's understood the man, known as Mad Dog, was seized by police while he was in a car on the Loyalist Shankill Road. It's not thought there was a struggle. The arrest came after the Northern Ireland Secretary, Peter Mandelson, held talks with police and army chiefs to assess the threat posed by the fighting between Loyalist factions, which has led to two murders and threatened escalating violence.
Pig farmers have welcomed the European Union's decision to lift a blanket ban on the export of live pigs from England following an outbreak of swine fever in East Anglia. Restrictions will continue to affect Norfolk, Suffolk and Essex. The RAF has paid tribute to the three air cadets killed in a coach crash on the A1 in Cambridgeshire last night. Wayne Maynard, Christopher Colmer and Jason Adnett were described as outstanding members of the organisation and excellent young citizens. The cadets were returning to RAF Wittering near Peterborough when the crash happened. The Russian President Vladimir Putin has been meeting relatives of the crew who died on the submarine the Kursk. He spoke to them for 3 hours and answered their questions during a visit to a closed naval town in northern Russia. Three men have been arrested following an investigation into an internet banking fraud. The suspects were detained during a series of raids by National Crime Squad officers. Here's our crime correspondent, Stephen Cape.
The arrests followed a six-month inquiry into internet banking fraud. Officers swooped on addresses in Buckinghamshire, Bedfordshire and Northamptonshire. Computer equipment as well as a quantity of cash and drugs were seized and they're being examined by forensic experts. Detective Sergeant Mick Randall of the National Crime Squad said it had been a very complex investigation. The squad had been working closely with the banking industry to prevent and detect this sort of crime. He believed that organised criminals were behind the attempt to defraud a major internet bank, which had asked not to be named. Three men in their 30s have been arrested. They're being held at a police station in Milton Keynes.
The family of a British woman who disappeared in Japan nearly 2 months ago has offered a reward for information to help find her. Lucy Blackman, who's 21, has been working as a nightclub hostess. The weather, most places will become dry tonight, although showers may persist in the southwest. Tomorrow it'll be generally warm with sunny spells, although there may be rain in the southwest and the far north. BBC News at 3 minutes past 10, are next at 11.
Hi, I'm Richard Niles, welcoming you to The Arrangers, the series that celebrates the giants of easy listening and mood music. Those of you who are still awake will notice that though this series is called The Arrangers, all the men we featured were composers as well. So what's the difference? The truth is, not a lot. An arranger decides which instruments play what notes. This requires vast technical knowledge of all instruments and how they sound in different registers. But an arranger also decides what notes they play, writing original melodies and counter melodies. That's called composition, and tonight's featured artist, Percy Faith, did plenty of it. One of the first to see the potential in mood music, Percy Faith clocked up over 90 albums for Columbia, three of which went gold and all of which made a profit. And he's thought to have exceeded the 60 million mark in sales, plus his 60 or so singles, including three number ones, Theme from a Summer Place, Moulin Rouge, and in 1952, Delicato, which featured a tour de force in harpsichord playing from Stan Freeman.
The term easy listening for me paints a picture of very bland and blah. And Dad's arrangements were the furthest thing from bland and blah. Easy listening to me is background music. It's benign. It's just there, but it isn't interfering. Whereas Dad's arrangements are an adventure. So that the easy listening thing I really resent, because it isn't easy listening, it's adventurous listening.
Artists have come and have gone. They go in the door and go out the other door. I don't know whether that's luck or what, but I know on my part, it's a continual study on my part because I don't want to retire. I like to do things to the best of my ability, and the one thing I can do that way is music. So I'm always studying. I listen to all the rock group records. I go to some of the concerts. I go to the symphony concerts. I'm always looking for ideas. I'm always interested. That's the point.
As Marilyn Faith Leonard, Percy's daughter, pointed out, it's somewhat ironic that Percy is associated with an area of music which is often dismissed for its unchallenging nature, when, in fact, his openness to new influences and willingness to experiment are, in a way, trademarks of his style. Critics love to criticize, and why not? What else are they good for? Percy was either too mellow with his sweet strings or too raucous with his splashy brass on his Mexican or Cuban albums. But because the public didn't care what the critics said and just bought millions of his records, Percy Faith never did have to retire. He once said he was happy to be satisfying the millions of devotees of that pleasant American institution known as the quiet evening at home, the easy chair, slippers, and good music. Good music remained as important a part of his life when he was in his 60s as it had been when, at the tender age of 7, he scraped out his first notes on the violin.
When I was 7 years of age, my mother wanted me to study music. And she got me violin. And I played that for 3 years, and I didn't like it. I don't think I ever really wanted to be a musician. I wanted to play baseball. Then at 10 years of age, I started to study piano, and I dropped the violin. I became very good at the piano, and I started to play in the movie theaters when I was about 14. I was playing in hotel concert orchestras. I was studying to be concert pianist. And I had a bad accident, and I burnt my hands soon. Well, my sister, little sister, she was 3 years old. She would play with matches. And I was the only one in the house, and I saved her life. I took her clothes off while it was burning and burnt my hands. And I couldn't play piano for about 8 or 9 months. So my teacher called my mother and said, I think that this will be an excuse for him to forget about music, so we better tell him to study harmony and composition. So I put a pencil in the bandages in my hand and I started to study composition. When I found that, then I knew what I wanted to do.
Percy Faith was always looking for new material, and he found a rich source in the glamorous world of musical theater, becoming one of the first to record instrumental versions of Broadway hit shows. This 1953 recording of Kismet is a great example. His daughter Marilyn remembers that he always had a talent for interpreting this kind of music.
There just was a lot of him, of what he was in his music, of his personality. He was able to capture what the songwriter meant the song to impart. Most of what he did were standards. It depends on the era whether you'd call them pop composers, but the Gershwins and the Jerome Kearns and Rodgers and Hammerstein, Cole Porter, all of these wonderful composers. And I guess that reached people.
Faith is associated with the sound of lush sweeping strings, but he was also inspired by brass and woodwind, especially in his many Latin records like Viva or Malagueña, as described by Faith aficionado Alan Bunting.
This love of Latin American music was apparent from the very, very first recordings he made back on good old scratchy 78s. And he honed it to perfection in brilliant albums like Brazil, Mucho Gusto, Malagueña, and Viva. All the tracks on this album are wonderful because they range from the joyous to the meditative and cover every aspect of it, of Latin American music. But one that actually demonstrates his amazing aptitude for creating intricate counter melodies and rhythms without losing sight of the tune is La Cucaracha. It's an amazing arrangement, and American orchestras seem to have a kind of joie de vivre for playing this kind of music that doesn't exist in orchestras of other countries.
People have said over the years, where does a Jewish boy from Toronto come off with Latin music? But it's only in the last few years when I still like to watch the old movies of the 40s, the musicals. And there was a lot of Xavier Cugat. There was a lot of Latin music in the films of the 40s. And some of the 30s, the Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers things. So, you know, we never discussed it, how he came across the love of Latin music and a tremendous affinity for it, because his Latin albums still sell.
After the release of Viva in 1957, Percy Faith was ready for a new challenge, and in a bar in New York, on the corner of 3rd and 30th Street, if you're interested, he was having a nightcap with sound engineer Harold Chapman and assorted members of the orchestra when he hit on the idea of recording an album entirely with strings. "Not even a flute?" Percy's flautist asked dejectedly. "Come on," Percy told him, "I'll drive you home. Next time, maybe all flutes." Bouquet may have been short of flutes, but with 32 violins, 8 cellos, 6 violas, 2 basses, and a rhythm section made up of harp, piano, guitar, and vibraphone, it certainly wasn't short on volume.
He uses this huge string orchestra to maximum effect. He divides it into four parts, and then at times these four parts are subdivided even further. Musicians in America literally queued up to work on Percy Faith recording sessions, and the orchestra for Bouquets have got at least half a dozen concertmasters playing in the orchestra. And it's further helped by the fact that they were recorded in Columbia's 30th Street studio in New York, which had a fantastic acoustic. And he also had one of America's most brilliant engineers, Harold Chapman, balancing the sound for him. So I suppose it's hardly surprising it sounds so wonderful.
When he had an album to do or a concert, he would sit at the piano with a writing table beside the piano bench where his manuscript was and all his pencils and stuff, and he would have the TV on for company. He'd have soap operas on, and people used to say, well, how can you concentrate with that going on in your ear? He said, it's company.
Percy Faith composed the score to the James Cagney Doris Day film Love Me or Leave Me, and to Tammy, the Oscar, and the Love Goddesses. He also composed many instrumental and vocal hits, such as My Heart Cries for You for Guy Mitchell. He drew little distinction between composing and arranging, which, he pointed out, involved the creation of completely new counter melodies anyway. This promotional video for Columbia Records features an interview between Percy and Goddard Lieberson, and gives a fascinating insight into his methods of working.
Now here is the music which is sent to me by the producer, and of course it's the plain melody, completely denuded, and it, of course, as you know, goes like this.
Yes. Now, that's all you get.
That's all I get, and from there on I have to produce a big, important piece of music with a large orchestra, and after much thought, or sometimes very little thought, depends on how I feel. In this case, the introduction came up this way.
Those elements, the bass and
the figure and the melody, never having lost track or lost the intent of the composer.
Yeah.
Now later I would add the this obbligato oboe, which gives it a third voice.
Mm-hmm.
Now if you'll play the melody, I'll continue.
Okay,
here.
Go ahead. That melody, which you just played, was not in the mind of the person who wrote Temptation. This is an entirely new melody.
That's right. We've already composed two different counters, but he never loses track of the melody, which would go on this way, of course, and become this size.
The sound of Percy Faith, Jealousy, a new showcase for his suave and colorful instrumental style. The lively arrangements of Ray Conniff, his latest, Say It With Music, with a touch of Latin rhythm. And a fresh new Mitch Miller sound, a brilliant brass band that goes marching along with Mitch. The sound of Percy Faith, Ray Conniff, Mitch Miller, yours on Columbia Records.
With Percy Faith, Ray Conniff, and Mitch Miller, Columbia had the mood music market practically sewn up. Indeed, it was Mitch Miller who first hired Percy at Columbia in 1950, although the association between the two of them went way back to when he and Mitch, a brilliant oboe player, had worked together as musicians in the 40s. The two of them also made several recordings together, including this Alex Wilder song, Goodbye John, from 1955.
Percy, I was an admirer of his when he used to broadcast from Canada from an old Negro church, because it was all wood and it was a marvelous studio. And I used to hear it, never thinking he would end up in the United States. Percy Faith had what I looked for in all artists. When you heard a Percy Faith arrangement, you knew it was his. And that's what I looked for when I signed the artist for an identity. Because when you sell a record and it's beautiful and people like to hear it, but that's it, we call that a turntable hit. Nobody buys it. When you buy a record, you took it home to play 100, 200 times. It became part of your library. And so I tried to get ingredients that would so intrigue the listener that they'd want to own it so that they could play it over and over again. With Percy Faith, we used a combination of voices and strings. We experimented with all sorts of different sounds, because the same arrangement done with different sounds, sometimes you could mine some gold out of it, especially if the arrangement was good in the first place. I'll give you an example. I had Victor Moon. We were recording A Street Where You Live. My Fair Lady had just opened. And everything falls on the strong beat. Da da dee da dee da da dee da da. And the middle part, Percy had, at the bridge of the song, he had the harps and the strings and the woodwinds. They did this run. Oh, that powerful feeling. And I said, Percy, how about the introduction being that? Just, oh, that powerful feeling. In 5 minutes, he turned around, rearranged it, and it turned out being one of the biggest hits.
Oh, the towering feeling, just to know somehow you are near. I have often walked on this street before, but the pavement always stayed beneath my feet before. All at once am I several stories high, knowing I'm on the street where you live.
Who wouldn't like Vic Damone on the street where you live? Percy worked with many top singers while he was at Columbia, including Johnny Mathis, and made 3 gold records for Tony Bennett. As his daughter Marilyn describes, these were done more out of necessity than love.
He was an instrumentalist at heart, and working with singers meant accompaniments. It really was a contractual thing. When he joined Columbia, they said, "We will give you carte blanche as to what you record, if you will help us with the new upcoming artists," who were Johnny Mathis, Tony Bennett, Rosie Clooney, Jerry Vale. I mean, there was endless. That was the agreement. He didn't do it forever. He just did it for a few years. But he didn't enjoy it simply because he loved doing instrumentals. He He liked interpreting the lyrics with the voices of the orchestra.
His use of a female chorus sparks off more discussion than any other aspect of his work. It actually goes right back to his days in Canada when he wanted more woodwind players in the orchestra, but the budget wouldn't run to it. And he then found out that he could actually hire girl singers for $5 per show. So he did that, and he, instead of using them as singers, arranged their voices to be a part of the orchestra. A technique that, in interviews, he used to describe as vocalese, where the human voice is treated like an instrument. In the 60s and 70s, he made numerous recordings using the same female chorus, but actually singing the words. Now, this is a development that's surrounded in controversy and debate as to whether Percy really wanted to do this, or if it was something that was forced on him by Columbia executives who believed that this was what sold albums.
We can't end a program about Percy Faith without playing his most famous, if not his favorite, piece of music. Voted number one in the top 10 beautiful music instrumentals, Theme from a Summer Place was actually written by Max Steiner, considered one of the greatest film composers ever, with over 300 classic films to his credit. Percy Faith made it a hit for him, not once, but twice, in its original incarnation in 1960, and then again in 1976, when he gave it a groovy, squeeze into your bell-bottoms and don't fall out of your halter top disco treatment. Interestingly, it was not one of his easiest arrangements.
When the music was given to him, with the hopes that he would record it, arrange it and record it, he called Max Steiner, who he admired tremendously, and he said, "Max, I'm having a problem with this." He said, "All the triplets." He said, "I don't want to be linked with rock and roll and so forth." And Max Steiner said to him, "Well, Percy, it was okay for Mozart. What's your problem?"
As Percy himself said of A Summer Place, "It may not be my favorite arrangement, but I'm certainly glad to have it. I'd be glad to have A Summer Place too, but hey, it's the rain that makes Britain great." Thanks to my racy researcher, Dominic Black, and my pulchritudinous producer, Lindsay Moyes. I'm still Richard Niles, and we'll be back at the same time next week with the very big sounds of Jeff Love on The Arrangers.
Hey, thank you, Richard Niles.
HEH 91 FM, Jamie Lee Grace, BBC Radio 2.
A wonderful arranger himself, if I may say so. So welcome to the show. And if you're thinking, that's not Lynn Parsons, you're absolutely right. She's off again. She's just a tad poorly. It's Jamie Lee Grace with you, sitting in tonight and tomorrow.